Well, good morning, and thank you for tuning in to the morning show this Wednesday, October 24th. That's today. And also for tuning in to Local Decision 2018. I'm Susie Prez, and I'm going solo today as my co-host, Chris Bessler, is out of town. Today, for the Local Decision 2018 interview, we have a recorded interview that we recorded 2 days ago with Bonner County Commissioner District 3 candidates Steve Lockwood and Dan McDonald. But first, let's look at the weather from the National Weather Service. We have currently 41 degrees, and today we can expect a high of 56, partly sunny, mostly cloudy tonight, a low of 40. Kind of the same thing tomorrow, partly sunny, high of 54. But tomorrow night, we have an 80% chance of rain with a low of 41. And on Friday, rain, 80% chance, high of 52. But then on Saturday, we go back to the partly cloudy, mostly sunny, and a high of 56 through the weekend. That looks like pretty much what's going on. And a few announcements before we get to our interview with the county commissioner candidates. Tomorrow on the morning show, Seth McCutcheon and Debbie Love from the Bonner Community Food Bank will be joining Jack Peterson and Jim Healy. And tonight at 7 o'clock, I'll be in the studio with a live interview with our very own, I think of her like that, Holly McGarry. For a live interview, she'll be playing some tunes and telling us stories about her life back east with her band Honeysuckle and what it's like to be on the road now, touring quite a bit. So that should be fun tonight. You can tune in for that live interview at 7. And also, I have an announcement from Jennifer Stapleton from the city. She asked to announce this. On October 25th, that's tomorrow, there'll be Phase 2 Downtown Revitalization Project meeting. That's at 8 a.m. That's early. At the Little Panada Theater, you can join Mayor Ronstadt and the City of Sandpoint staff for a meeting to discuss Phase 2, which is coming up next year. Downtown Revitalization Project, that's tomorrow, October 25th, at the Little Panada Theater at 8 a.m. Maybe they'll have coffee there for you. Well, we're going to get to our interview now, but a few things about it. By the way, all of the Local Decision 2018 general election interviews that we've been having leading up to the election on Wednesday mornings are available on our website at krfy.org under podcast. Those are always available after they have aired and listed by broadcast date. So you can go back there and re-listen or listen for the first time if you miss them. As always, with all of our interviews, we encourage our listeners to check statements for information given by candidates for accuracy. The format for these interviews allows the candidate to speak from their own point of view. So thank you for that. And here is the interview recorded earlier with candidates for Bonner County Commissioner District 3 position, Steve Lockwood and Dan McDonald.
And good morning. We're here today with the two candidates for Bonner County Commissioner District 3. That's Dan McDonald, the incumbent Republican, and Steve Lockwood, the Democrat challenger. Dan, thanks for coming.
Oh, my pleasure.
And Steve, thank you for coming.
Oh, pleased to be here.
So here's how we're going to run it. We want each of you to have equal time for answers and responses, but so that we can cover a variety of questions, we're going to try to limit the time to about 90 seconds. You get a couple minutes for an opening statement.
Okay.
And then we'll give an opportunity for rebuttal if you guys want to make rebuttals. So let's start with an opening statement from each of you to introduce yourself to the voters. Tell us a bit about your background, your qualifications, and why you decided to run for office. Let's start with you, Steve.
Sure. Thanks, Chris, and thanks for having us on. I'm running because Dan McDonald needs to be opposed by a serious, qualified candidate with vision, not just ideology. I will listen and bring people together across the political spectrum, not tear them apart. I have the skills, successes, and experience to do the job well. They've been demonstrated in private industry and in a variety of government volunteer positions. Many others agree, and more than 300 have invested in my campaign so I can reach out to voters countywide. Many are staunch conservatives, concerned that we need stability in county government. I'm known as a nice person, but I can be bold. I'm not a bully. My priorities are to manage the county cost effectively and openly, to retain our rural character, attract good-paying jobs, and actively represent residents on issues like the smelter. Management accomplishments of mine include, as AT&T Operations Manager of Oregon, consistently delivering highest quality service at costs well below national averages with extremely low turnover. On the Lake Pend'Oreille School Board, we improved district management and stabilized funding to the point where the last levy was supported by 64% of voters, with McDonald opposed. While on the Sandpoint City Council, I initiated a new comprehensive plan with hundreds participating in its development. It greatly expanded housing opportunities at a variety of income levels and has attracted jobs. How? By working cooperatively, cooperating with partners, and minimizing conflict. I can be bold, but I'm not a bully.
Okay, thank you, Steve Lockwood. Dan McDonald, you get a couple minutes now for an opening statement.
Okay. One of the things that was, when I was approached to run the first time, was concerned by some of the local businesses, and they said, listen, we have an issue with the commissioner's seat in particular, because we keep electing guys that are people that are great folks. They serve honorably, but they don't have the experience to run an organization of this size. Prior to my previous job, I actually ran two large commercial roofing companies in the Bay Area in California, with over 400 employees. Annual sales were over 100 million. I was able to take them over for a offsite owner who said, listen, we have a problem with efficiencies. We have a problem with cost savings. I want you to come in and fix it. And I did just that. When I actually had achieved that, I decided to move on to greener pastures and got recruited to the company I worked for previously, where I also managed large budgets, large projects, lots of oversight. In fact, I wrote what is now the contract that the county uses on all of their projects. I have a lot of background in the community, served on several different charity boards. I'm currently on the Life Choices Pregnancy Center board as their treasurer, but I've served as a past president of the Panda Theater. I orchestrated the Barely There in Sandpoint campaign, where we had local artists make their own creations. And then at the end of this, we displayed them all over the city. And at the end of the summer, we auctioned them off for community cancer services and also benefit the Panda. My track record at the county speaks for itself. For the first time in Bonner County history last year, we cut the budget. And to not let that stand alone, we went ahead and did it again this year to get the county back into a more fiscally positive position. With respect to planning, I, too, am very interested in planning. I've done quite a bit of work. We found a number of loopholes in the original comp plan that were allowing development on farmland and forest land that we thought was inappropriate. So we established the local sub comp plan committees, and this is government of, by, and for the people. The folks in Selly Valley, Sagal, Blanchard, and Priest River, and we're getting ready to add one in Priest Lake, have the ability to determine their own future with respect to planning.
Okay, good. Thank you, Dan McDonald. So let's go to some questions now. And the first question goes to you, Dan. Mm-hmm. What do you consider the top three issues that are most important in this race at this time? Okay. Tell why you think they're important and where you stand on them.
Okay. Well, first and foremost is the budget, because if we don't have a sound, fiscally responsible budget, the county will go nowhere. And I'm happy to report, by the way, I found out this morning that our levy rate for property taxes has been reduced, just as we expected it to be. Again, we've cut quite a lot of money out of the budget, and we'll continue to do so until we get into that positive fiscal position. Although the way it looks now, next year we will be balanced. Planning is very important to me. Making sure that we protect our rural lands, but we also protect private property rights. I stood in opposition to the Project Greenprint, which looked to be very intrusive on private property rights for folks in the county. And so we stood, as the county stood, opposed to it. Also, our solid waste sites are in need of some help. They're antiquated. They're outdated. There's issues with debris blowing around. It's not good. They're not good environmentally. And so we're looking to go ahead and make some improvements to a couple of our larger sites, one of them in Idaho Hill and the other one at Culver and Culver, to actually make them both more user-friendly. Because if you've ever been to one, the traffic going in and out crosses each other. But also we have those dumpsters that people need to lift cans in and dump their waste. We've got a better plan. In fact, we've already drawn up plans for both locations. And it's just a matter of implementing it. Customer service has been huge for me in the county. I came from a customer service background, listening to customers, finding out what their needs are, and coming up with better ways to handle those needs. And by every measure, you look at customer service in the county, and we're actually getting compliments from people. I have a few more, and we can talk about them later.
Okay. Steve Lockwood, same question to you. What do you consider the top issues that are most important in the race, and why you think they're important?
One of the first ones is the growth in our county. We're among the fastest growing places in the state, and the state's one of the fastest in the country. That really has the potential to reduce the rural character of our place. I think there's a good deal that can be done about it planning-wise. If we emphasize growth within the cities where infrastructure is less expensive or already existing for housing, and maintain the natural resource base that we have in the county, we're way ahead, according to most people in the county. Jobs are an issue. The county doesn't directly provide jobs, but the county can act as a very important facilitator toward jobs. There are about 400 jobs that will come out, new jobs in timber, good-paying jobs, based on agreements that have been reached between the Forest Service and Idaho Forest Group and the conservation organizations. Taxes, of course, are a big one. I'm also among those who feel that it's really important to keep our taxes as low as we reasonably can, without diminishing the protections that come from proper planning and zoning. So those would be three, Chris.
Okay, great. Thank you, Steve. And next question, it goes to you first, Steve, and you already both actually talked about this a little bit, taxes and budget. Taxes are something that impact most voters directly and provide revenue for the budget, of course. The question that we'd like you to address is, do you feel the county has struck the correct balance between taxes and services in its budget?
Yes and no. The way government budgeting works basically is the department heads come in with the things they think are important to do. It's always a bigger number than is available. The county clerk comes in with a number of what's available. The job of the commissioners is to make those match and choose among the important things that the various departments think need to happen. That number has always matched. Legally, it's required to match. No one individual commissioner has any authority on the budget. They all have ideas, of course, but all decisions of the commissioner by law need to be made on a majority basis, and ours generally are. So it's not a one-person thing. It's all three working together. Budget-wise, the commissioners raised their salaries $10,000 in the last 2 years. I will not take that $10,000, or if somehow that's not possible, I'll give it to the food bank.
Thank you, Steve Lockwood. Dan McDonald, same question to you. Taxes impact most of the voters directly. Dan, one of the statements in your campaign is that the commissioners over the past 2 years have cut $12 million mm-hmm. from the budget. Do you think you're hitting the right mix between the amount of taxes and where the budget sits and the services that the county provides?
Sure. Yeah. And actually, we just got the final numbers. It's actually over 12 million now. It's closer to about 16. So yeah, when it comes to budget, here's the deal. Department heads will always come in. In fact, my first year in, we had department heads, the former road and bridge director came in, wanted three new trucks. And I said, why do you need three new trucks? He said, well, I rotate my inventory every 10 years. And I said, well, my background was in excavating. My dad owns a big excavation company. I got a huge background. I said, you know, most trucks aren't rotated for 20 to 25 years. And they'd been doing this for a number of years at $500,000 a whack. So our job as commissioner is to be able to kind of cut the baby and go, okay, what actually makes sense? What's appropriate and what's just empire building. And that's what we saw in the past. We saw a lot of empire building. So that was the low hanging fruit we went after the first year. Now, let me tell you, too, with all the cuts we've made, we've not cut a single service. We literally found a great deal of fat in the budget. My background is with budget. So you'll see the other two commissioners, while they absolutely do participate and we all vote. If you come to any or listen to the tapes or come to any of the budget hearings, you see that I'm kind of driving the boat on the budget. With respect to the raises, that keeps coming up. A plan started 2 years before we came in, and it was to bring all county employees up to average with our size county. We went through a number of increases with different departments, and finally, the elected officials overall were saved for last to bring to average. This is something that HR develops through Ameriben. They do a wage study. That information comes to us in the form of HR's recommendations. We don't get to pick the number. She just says, here are the numbers for each position. Now, Road and Bridge, we had to raise them about 20% because not only did we have were they scheduled to go up, but there was a market demand as well. Same thing with EMS and same thing with planning. Those were areas where we were losing people that we would train to other counties. But as far as the raise goes, it was part of the plan. We just agreed to it. And in fact, if you listened, I pulled them off the table after the first round. I said, let's pull off all department heads' raises and all elected officials' raises until we see where we're going to end up because we have three rounds. So we finally got beyond the last round. The clerk came in and said, we found another $760,000 you guys had cut. So I think we should go ahead and add all the elected officials' raises in. The total for all the elected officials was $38,000. It's not like it was hundreds of thousands. It was just 38.
Okay. Thank you. And Steve, you got a rebuttal and actually an extra 30 seconds there if you like it.
The HR department works for the commissioners. They recommend a raise. It's easy to recommend a raise to your boss. There were certain jobs within the county that were underpaid, and there was attrition, but people were leaving to go elsewhere. That was a real issue, and those jobs needed to be paid more. I'll be very happy with the $64,000 salary. I don't need the $78,000.
It was 68, just to correct you. Sorry.
Okay. Onward, Steve.
Yes, yep. It was. You're right. There are a number of additional savings. The county clerk came in with many recommendations. The commission accepted only a few of them. My opponent was arguing for taking all the foregone, as was recommended by the county clerk. The commissioner from Priest River, Jeff Connolly, said, I won't do it, and left the room. He simply couldn't tolerate that much of an increase, a 12% increase. They ended up at 3%. That's just fine.
Can I go ahead and rebut that?
Yes, you get about 60 seconds.
A couple things. One, the recommendation from the clerk originally early on was, let's go ahead and we should take foregone, and we considered it. Now, as we got into the second round, I said, listen, I'm seeing that we can make the cuts here, so we don't want to take foregone. In fact, all the way up to the date, to the very meeting where we passed the budget, he was still recommending we take foregone, and we said unanimously no. With respect to our HR director giving a raise to their boss, I take exception with that comment because we have an excellent HR director. Of all the places I've ever worked, Cindy Binkert is by far one of the best HR directors out there. And if you ever see the relationship between us and HR, she basically comes in and says, here are my recommendations. We don't go to her. We don't ask for anything. She's a pro. To say that she would be giving her bosses a raise just because she's trying to win favor is the furthest thing from the truth. And I think that's kind of disrespectful to Cindy Binkert.
Okay. Onward to the next question. Roads. And Dan, I think you're first on this one. How do you feel the county is doing in maintenance and construction of county roads? Are you satisfied or do you want to bring changes to road and bridge operations?
Well, by every measure, the roads are in some of the best conditions we've seen in decades. One of the things we did, the Board of Commissioners did last year, was we retasked Road and Bridge. They were spending a lot of time on road building, and we said, listen, our good roads are starting to degrade because we're not maintaining the right-of-ways, the ditches, the culverts. In fact, the spring we were sworn in January 2017. By March, we had a big melt-off, and we were having culverts blow up. A lot of it was because they were plugged with our own gravel. So certainly our process wasn't right. So we retasked Road and Bridge to focus on those right-of-ways because when you have ditches full of water, they undercut the road and it tends to hurt the road. So by every measure, like I said, we typically don't get compliments about Road and Bridge, shockingly enough. we've had a number of compliments about Road and Bridge over the last 2 years and how much better the road conditions are. We had one little hiccup where we got some bad gravel that had some clay in it, but we were able to fix that quickly. But yeah, no, I think the condition of the roads are excellent and they're going to continue to get better.
Okay. Thank you. Steve Lockwood, same question to you. How do you feel the county is doing in maintenance and construction of county roads? Are you satisfied or will you look for changes?
In most respects, I think the roads are doing really well. The piece that's missing is bridge maintenance. We have not done bridge maintenance for a long time, and there's a great backlog in bridge maintenance. It's really important. It's an expensive fix when a bridge needs some work. There's been a lot of attention to the shoulders of the roads, which has been important. We need that same level of attention to our bridges in our county. They're an expensive piece of that infrastructure. One of the issues that's come up with roads is pay to play. You've seen that in the local papers, at least. There is a policy that if the folks on a road are willing to kick in the material costs, the county will do the labor to improve the road. This advantages people who are more well-to-do. I think that's inappropriate. I think the roads should be maintained based on the maintenance condition, the traffic counts, those are a big one, use by school buses, alternate use as highways when 95, for instance, is shut down and there needs to be an alternative path. So that's one of the issues that I think needs to be changed.
Okay.
There's a couple of claims I'd like to respond to quickly, if I could.
Yes.
Bridge maintenance. One of the things I looked back over the budgets over several decades, we've never had money for bridge maintenance. It's never been put in the budget. For the first time this year, we actually put money in the budget. We have a schedule for repair. We do get some money from the state on occasion. We've applied for a couple of grants and we're replacing a bridge up on East River. But we have actually plugged some money in to start doing some maintenance. Secondly, the pay-to-play fallacy. What we have is a program called, it's an LIF. It's like an LID, local improvement district. And the complaint comes from some folks on Lakeshore who were offered the same program. Their current condition of the road is gravel. They want to improve that condition and they seem to want the taxpayers to pay for it. Now, other groups have come forward and said, we are happy to participate in this program because it's fair to all. And they've started to raise money. We've done two of these this last summer over in the Priest River area. And we are potentially going to do one next year, but it is not advantage or disadvantage anyone. All it is if you want your road to be in a better condition, if you've got a gravel and you want to change that surface to something harder, then you can do that. But your taxes go to pay for the road in the condition it is. Most people have bought knowing the road was gravel and it's still gravel.
Okay. Thank you. Steve, you do have 60 seconds if you want to say more.
However, if an area has the money to put forth the materials and the county pays for the labor involved, that does advantage those who have more money.
It actually doesn't. The labor is already figured in on a 52-week basis. So those guys are going to be doing something. If someone wants to go ahead and improve, again, this is an improvement. This is not maintaining. Our guys do a great job of maintaining these roads. If they're going to improve it, then that's where this comes into play. If they choose not to, they choose not to.
Any more on that one, Steve? We'll move on. Planning issues. Since planning is a big one, both of you have actually talked about that a little bit already. Let's phrase up this question about the natural resource plan for the county, which is a 95-page document that generally advocates for multiple uses on public lands. And this is something that the commissioners approved last winter. Supporters say it's a tool to give the county a say about use of state and federal lands, while opponents thought it lacked a diversity of viewpoints and they criticized the process. Dan, this question goes to you first. What's your position on the natural resource plan? More generally, do you feel the county is following a good path in regards to planning and zoning issues?
I do. The natural resource plan is actually a result of two different federal statutes that say that the federal government has to bring the local governments into play when discussing resources within the county, within the county boundaries. We actually had quite extensive hearings on this. We listened to a lot of folks, including Idaho Conservation League came in and we made several changes based on what they wanted. So we were very open and transparent with this. We came up with a final document that gives us standing Now, what it doesn't do is it doesn't give us control. The federal government certainly is not going to listen to the county and be dictated to by the county.
Okay. Thank you. You got a little bit more time. Do you want to talk to, is planning and zoning in general, do you feel going well?
Oh, I think it's fantastic. County? I think we've got one of the best directors we've ever had. They're making a lot of innovative changes. Like I said, these sub-comp plan groups are awesome. We have good citizens that have volunteered their time because they care about planning in their area. One of the focuses is to protect the farmland and forest land. We've got productive farmland. We've got productive forest land. We don't want to see Bonner County end up looking like Kootenai County. So we're going to protect those. And that's one of the charges of these individual groups is to look at that first and say, okay, how do we protect that land while opening up for some development? Because growth is inevitable. But we can plan for it properly and make sure it doesn't. We don't end up looking like the folks south of us who have wall-to-wall houses.
Okay, thank you. Steve, the same question to you. What do you have a position on the natural resource plan that the county adopted last winter? And how do you feel that the county is doing in regards to planning and zoning?
The natural resources plan is a prime example of the county not being open. It was a hand-picked group. Most of the things that it recommends won't pass legal muster. It represents basically one point of view. The way to make permanent change is to gather parties of all points of view together and discuss what can happen or what needs to happen. That was not done in the case of the natural resources plan. It was a stacked deck. Many people wrote long comments about the natural resources plan when it was drafted. They were dismissed almost out of hand without significant answers to the vast majority of the questions and suggestions that came in. I have looked through them. I've read the plan. It's a long plan. Most of it, frankly, isn't even legal because it deals with state and national issues that we don't control. Moving on to our local planning, I was approached by a couple of folks off of Lower Pack Road a couple of weeks ago. There's a almost, I don't know the words to use, almost a survivalist training camp going in up there with tiny houses and inadequate permits or no permits and a lack of sewage treatment. There are about 10 now. They're planning to go for 22 up a very narrow road. The neighbors are up in arms. I met with the planning director last week on other issues, asked him about this. He said, there's really nothing happening. The folks who live up there, a larger group of a dozen or so, met with me just yesterday and described the complaints that they have filed, answers they have not gotten. And it sounds like a horrific situation.
I'd like to respond.
Okay. Thank you. Yeah, you get a rebuttal?
So as far as the handpicked group goes for the Natural Resources Committee, that committee started 5 years ago. Within that, we advertised it as we do with every committee. We got a list of folks, and we had just enough basically to form the committee. And this is before I came on. This is what I was told. Throughout that time, there have been 6 seat changes that we again advertised for each one, and folks came forward and volunteered. We actually have a hard time finding volunteers to be on these boards because they are time consuming. But these folks worked really hard for a long time. As far as legal muster goes, everything is passed through our attorney to make sure it's legal before we put it out there. The document itself is actually 45 pages long, actually less than that now. It's like 42, if I recall. There's a whole list of references in the back that cross-reference all the legal standing for each one of the comments in there. So that's completely false. With respect to the survivalist training camp, it's not a survivalist training camp. What it is a place where it's an executive camp where people come to deal with their issues. If you're an alcoholic, if you're addicted to porn, any of these kind of things, they can come here and there's a program that kind of helps retune you and get you away from your addiction. Now, they were operating without a conditional use permit, and we heard from one neighbor, a couple, that had a complaint. I followed up on it with our planning department. We went out and did a site tour, and we said, you cannot continue to operate as you are until you file for a conditional use permit and go through the process. And they have complied with that. With respect to sewer, we reviewed the cabins. They're all standalone. They bring in porta potties. So that's not an issue. And when we started asking the neighbors, because we were told there's neighbor after neighbor that's opposed to this, all the neighbors that abut this property, with the exception of one, said they have no issue with. In fact, one of the neighbors even leased them some property to use. What they're doing is great work up there, but they need to do it legally, just like everyone else. And so we're holding their feet to the fire.
Okay, Steve, you have a rebuttal now, if you like.
It was really clear yesterday that most of the neighbors up there feel very differently from how we've just heard. And when I asked the planning director about it, he said he didn't know about it.
Right, because we've had one couple complain. Well, actually, we've had a second person complain.
He'd been up there.
But he was complaining about the gunshot, which was coming from a neighbor, not them. Gunshots,
okay.
I should say.
Well, that's a deeper issue that will probably still come up, I'm sure. But we'll move on to another question here. Now, we do invite listeners to submit questions, and this is one that a listener sent in. It concerns the silicon smelter that's proposed in Newport, which is just across the border from Bonner County, and has encountered a good amount of opposition here in Bonner County. And here's the question from the listener. The deadline for the smelter scoping process by the Washington State Department of Ecology is October 26. Both of you have said that there's much information needed to evaluate this project. What information do you need about the smelter? What research have you done? Have you or will you submit questions for the scoping process to get the information you need to protect the citizens of Bonner County? And that's to you, Steve, first.
I submitted scoping comments weeks ago. There is a lot that's needed. Baseline data is needed on the air quality and certain water quality issues. We need to know the amount of pollutants. We need to know the distribution of them. We need to know the plans for transportation of the various materials. There are quite a few additional things we need to know. Those were all in my scoping comments submitted long ago. As many know, I have been attending most of the meetings of the commission for 2 or 3 years now, and they've been asked by groups that have come in to weigh in. They've ducked away. The current commission has ducked away from that routinely and said, we're not involved. It's out of this county. That it's a legal issue that we can't be involved in. That's simply not correct. It's out of this county. They're not at any risk legally if they ask for scoping comments.
Okay, thank you. Dan, same question to you about the smelter.
And the issue isn't about scoping comments. In fact, every issue that my opponent just brought up about scoping comments was actually in their original draft that said, here are the 9 categories that we're going to be looking at. The scoping question was to find out, are there additional things that are concerns of the people in the area that they should be looking at? But when you look at the 9, they're extremely comprehensive. Washington Department of Ecology, this is not their first rodeo. With respect to us taking a position, we actually are sending in some questions for scoping, a few concerns that we think might be outside of what was put forward. But we were approached to take a stand on something that we have not seen the information on. Now, we've seen some blogs, some opinion pieces. I've even done a great deal of research on my own. I contacted the mayor of a town in Mississippi that has a similar type smelter, as well as the one in Niagara. And they've said they've had no issues. Now, I'm not going to take a position based on that because there is a legal standard. One of the first things you learn when you become a commissioner, you get trained on this kind of process. And until you have an actual legal process, which is the EIS process, that actually will produce information that will give us the impacts for water quality, air quality, transportation, the whole shooting match, then we will have something that we can point to and say, okay, our position is this based on this information. There was a county down in southern Idaho, Boise County, that had a similar issue. They had a budget of about $7 million. The commissioners listened to the loud opinions of some and not going with facts. They voted against this manufacturing plant. The plant owner sued the county for $9 million, which the taxpayers had to pay, and they wound up getting the plant anyway. If we were to take a legal action right now or even get our attorneys involved, we don't have standing. We haven't been damaged. We would lose, and the taxpayers ended up paying for the attorney's fees for our opponent.
Okay, thank you. Steve, you do have a minute to follow up or a rebuttal?
One person who has taken a stand and has made a difference is Heather Scott. She's done, our representative, she's done a wonderful job in involving the DEQ. They've finally gotten involved, and their comments are excellent. Their questions are excellent. Kudos to Heather Scott.
And I agree. I think Heather Scott's done a great job. And this is actually in her wheelhouse, because when it comes to air and water quality issues in Idaho, the commissioners have no authority. That's Idaho DEQ. It's a state issue. With respect to the difference between Heather and county commissioners, what we say has the force of law through ordinance. Heather is one of 105. We are three, and I'm one of three. So we are very careful. And again, this is part of the training you get when you become a commissioner. This is why my opponent probably doesn't know it. Very careful about our comments with respect to legal issues like this.
Okay. All right. Another question from a listener concerning the second train bridge that Burlington Northern Santa Fe is intending to build right here across Lake Pend'Oreille. Here's the question from the listener. And this goes to you first, Steve, I believe. This goes to you first, Dan.
Okay.
We do not have enough equipment or training to clean up spills and would have to wait for help from Spokane or Whitefish. A low water spill, especially between October till April, requires a boat launch in Hope or Laclede. What have you done or what will you do to lessen the impact of these risks? Have you or will you ask BNSF to pay for equipment and training we're lacking to clean up spills?
Actually, we didn't have to ask BNSF, and that statement is not enough resources is absolutely incorrect. In fact, we just did another training drill just last week. BNSF has given us a great deal of equipment, more than we've ever had in the county. They've also given us access to an airboat. So during low water launches, we have an airboat that we can use. They've been very generous because they're one of our largest taxpayers in the county, and they care about what happens here. They've been very generous with the county. And full disclosure, they've made donations to my campaign. But they've been very generous to the county there. Our little mini ambulance that we use for hiking trails and along railroad tracks, all the money for that was donated from BNSF. The city of Sandpoint's gotten grants from BNSF. They're a really good neighbor. But they have done a great job of providing us with more than enough equipment and materials that we need. And we continue to drill with all of our first responders. We do about two drills a year so that we're ready to roll.
Okay. Thank you, Dan. Steve, same question to you. Do you feel we are properly equipped to handle an emergency or a spill that might occur from a train going across the bridge?
We are not. People in the know say we need a low water launching ramp, the downstream, and that's not a terribly expensive thing. BNSF sent in a couple of very large jets during the campaign and wined and dined, and Dan and another commissioner used their material to make a presentation to the at the hearing that was at the middle school. We need more help from BNSF. The booms need to be deployed quickly, year-round, potentially. We hope we never need them, but we need more facilities than we have today. The bridge, there is another idea, and that's to have a boom on the bridge that simply drops down. I don't know how viable that is, but all avenues should be pursued. We also have a lot of grade crossings that are difficult. Boyer is one. Bottle Bay is another. There are others. BNSF could help us resolve those instead of the first thing out of the mouths of our commissioners being, hey, the bridge is a great idea, which is what they said. Yes, the bridge will be built, but that's the time to negotiate. And we didn't hear that at first.
Okay.
Right. And I want to rebut that. So a couple things. Low water ramp, we're actually in the process of creating one right now. But with the airboat, it actually reduces that potential liability. We're still going forward with it. They didn't bring in jets. They brought in their train car, and it had nothing to do with the bridge. It was to award the county the Heritage Award. And what they did is they contacted us, and they said, we want to award the Bonner County the Heritage Award. You get to pick the charity of your choosing to award $10,000 to. So the commissioners unanimously chose the food banks. So we gave $5,000 to the Sandpoint Food Bank and $5,000 to the food bank over in Old Town.
I can show you a picture of the jets.
It's not a jet. It was a train. It was pulled up right here. Mayor Shelby was on the train with us. Several people were on it. They know it's not. In fact, the city manager was on the train with us. It wasn't a jet. It was a train. As far as access, our emergency management team is awesome. They work with all the first responders, all the different fire departments. We continue to drill and train. We are ready for a spill. In fact, we had a little spill when their barge broke loose and capsized and dumped a generator in the lake. We were right on it within, I think it was an hour and a half, had it contained, no issue. It was a good test of our resources.
Steve, you got 60 seconds if you want to follow up on that.
No, okay. I don't need to.
Okay, on to another question. Actually, a couple of listeners sent in this question. I kind of smushed them together here. This is concerns Proposition 2 for the Medicaid expansion. And this one goes to you first, Steve. And the Proposition 2 that voters will see on the ballot on November 6th is to expand Medicaid to provide for about 62,000 Idaho residents who fall in the so-called Medicaid gap because they earn too much money to qualify for Medicaid, but not enough to afford insurance on the state health exchange. Here's the question, which we've combined from a couple of different listeners. The Idaho Association of Counties almost unanimously backed Governor Otter's 2015 failed attempt to accept the Medicaid expansion funds for Idaho. Meanwhile, the Idaho Sheriff's Association has recently endorsed Proposition 2, with one of its officials saying they support it to save taxpayers money, to keep people out of jails, and to keep people out of the emergency room. Finally, we'll get to the question here. Steve, how would closing the gap affect county taxes? How would it affect Bonner General Hospital? Do you believe that closing the gap would save the county money?
People in the know support the closing of the gap. The Sheriff's Association of the state also weighed in. It saves us money as a county, and it helps people. It helps working people. It's a no-brainer.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. And actually, if you go to Otter's comment in 2017, he said there's no way this will ever become law in Idaho because he finally saw the impacts of other states that have done it, like Montana, who is now considering to step back away from expansion. Here's the impact, the actual impact of the county. We have the catastrophic fund that we work with. The county pays the first $11,000 for indigent care. Should Medicaid come into play, it doesn't take care of some of the processes we have to do. They'll get rid of that CAT fund to help fund it. And so the tax liability or the liability of the county would be somewhere between $2 and $5 million, according to the CAT fund director. They've done extensive studies on this and looked at the damage. $2 to $5 million is more than we could raise taxes in a single year. It would take us a number of years. Our tax increase this year was only $760,000. So that's think of how many years that would have to go. We'd either have to go for a special tax increase or where we'd be in trouble. It would capsize us. We'd have to cut services. My problem with Prop 2 is this. It's lazy in its thinking. There are better ways to solve this. And we've seen with Obamacare that one size fits all doesn't work. What'll happen is you'll see the gap shift because Medicaid is a market multiplier. So it increases the cost of actual health care, not just health insurance. It does both. My option would be to go with bring back the catastrophic insurance, the major medical plans. They were great. They're low cost. They handle big issues. That would cover a portion of that gap. Two, use risk pools in the state. Have the state commissioner say, hey, listen, if you're doing insurance in the state of Idaho, you need to take a certain number of the uninsured. Now, that will increase health care costs in that pool, but it won't affect actual health care, the cost of actually providing health care. And then the third one is to I just think I lost it. I'm sorry, Chris.
I was waving at you. It was fine.
Yeah,
anyways.
I know. There was a third one, but I...
Okay. Well, you had a follow-up, each of you. Steve.
Sure. We're already paying for it. We send the money to the feds and we won't let them send it back. Yes, Congress missed the boat. They left a hole there that they shouldn't have left. There would be a myriad of ways of fixing it. There's one on the table. We should take it. Even at its most conservative estimates with the Idaho Department of Health and Welfare, we are looking at a maximum cost of $10 million, but a tax revenue of $20 million, which cancels out the cost. There are no numbers to support a $5 million cost to the county.
There actually are, and if I can rebut that.
Okay, 60 seconds.
We're already paying for it. Idaho is a debtor state. I've seen the advertisements that say, oh, we'll get this money back. We already get back more money than we pay. So that's a complete fallacy. With respect to the other issues, yeah, I confirm the numbers between $2 and $5 million. It'll be the hit. To Bonner County. That'll be our portion.
Okay. All right. On to the next question. Each of you as candidates, by the way, thank you both for standing for office because you do hit criticisms and you have encountered criticisms during the course of your campaigns. Mm-hmm. So we're going to ask a couple of those. First one's for you, Dan. The local newspapers have carried stories about a video recording made by an individual who attended a meeting on the proposed smelter, at which you seem to make a statement of the Kalispell tribe that opposes the smelter, that, quote, if you don't give them a kickback, they're against your business, quote. Mm-hmm. You're on record as saying that it was edited or taken out of context, but mm-hmm. how would you like to address this?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, this tape was made back in November of last year, sent to the Kalispell tribe originally, according to the guy who made it. Then in the primary, they played it. It was during the primary. We do a Blanchard town hall every year for the folks of Blanchard, and county officials come in, Road and Bridge, sheriff, the commissioners. And he attempted to play the tribal part of it, but played the original unredacted version. And he tried to play it, wouldn't play. And I said, let me give you a recap of what was said. And I laid out the whole conversation. He played it. It was verbatim to what I said. And in the very beginning, I said, I don't know. I've never worked with the Kalispell tribe, but I can tell you about the tribes I have worked with, and especially the tribal councils. One of the problems you see on some of these reservations, at least the ones I've worked with, and this is my personal experience, is the tribal councils get everything and the people starve. We had issues with the BIA, who said that we're going to start auditing these. And if you actually go on and Google it, you can see there's some real issues with the way that whole thing functions. But never worked with the Kalispell tribe. The Kalispell tribe confirmed I've never worked with them. And I wasn't talking about the Kalispell tribe. I was only sharing my own observations. But that entire tape, we had our clerk, one of our sworn clerks in the room. She agrees that the tape has been dramatically altered. Another commissioner who was only in the room part of the time agreed. One of the things you hear is you hear them in a very calm voice, while I'm also in a calm voice. What was actually taking place is most of the time the other people in the tape were yelling and screaming. And that's something that really stuck out in our clerk's mind, and how off the hook they were while I remained calm. It's definitely been edited. Our attorney picked it up, and so did our forensic analyst at the sheriff's department.
Okay. You can make a comment if you want, Steve.
Three professionals have listened to that tape and say it's not edited.
Okay. All right. Well, Steve, now
you want to name those three professionals?
Yeah. Let's move on.
Okay.
Okay.
Steve, this one's for you. You've been elected in past years to the Lake Pondere School District Board of Trustees and the Sandpoint City Council, and you've served on a number of commissions. One criticism that's been aired is that you quit your last two elected positions midway through your terms. How do you want to respond to that?
I was appointed first to the school board, and then because a grandson of mine said, hey, granddad, you need to be on that school board. And then I was elected to that same position. While there, we stabilized the funding of the school district and gained a lot of support from the community. I quit when I won the position on the Sandpoint City Council. I ran for city council because the Sandpoint's comprehensive plan, which I was familiar with my time on planning and zoning, did not really represent the views of the city. And so we gathered hundreds of people together, revised the comprehensive plan. It was dramatically improved. I had a serious but very temporary health issue. Checked with the mayor. She had someone she could appoint who would do a fine job. She was fine with it, and I resigned from the council. That person took the job. It's important to do the jobs that come up that you feel you fit into well. Those come and go through life. There are others I've stayed on a long time. I've been on the Sandpoint Urban Renewal Board, making jobs for people, among other things, for over 10 years. I was with AT&T for 30 years. Some things, I was a scoutmaster for a long time. Some things you stay at for a long time. Other times, it's important to move along when there's a better opportunity.
Okay, thank you. Follow-up statement from you, Dan, if you want anything there.
Not a lot. I mean, when you get the faith and the trust in the people that elect you to run for office, you're expected to serve out the full term. Now, I can understand if Steve had some health issues, but I've always made commitments that I've kept, and I will continue to keep my commitments.
Okay, thank you. We're going to squeeze in one more question, then we're going to go to your closing statements. This one, again, is from a listener. It's on the 911 service. When Mr. McDonald took office, the commissioners declined the department director's offer to brief the commissioners on 911 reorganization and other technology. A $127,000 grant received by GIS was returned to the state. What reasons are there for these actions? Does cutting the budget take precedence over our safety? And if elected, will you work to keep us safe by updating our 911 service and partnering with other responders in Bonner County?
Okay. First of all, not true. We were briefed on it. We also recognize the fact that, let me unpack this just a bit. The grant was for GIS mapping of not just Bonner County, but the five counties. The previous, I know who this came from. This came from our previous IT and GIS director. He volunteered to have the county go ahead and map five counties. There is a time window on this grant, and it's up the end of this year. That task has been much more daunting than GIS originally thought. Well, the new director said it was going to be daunting. I don't know what the previous one said. So we're running out the window, and we are going to return the $127,000. However, it's a state mandate, and so they've already told us we'll get it back when we're ready. Now, with respect to regionalization of 911, that's to regionalize the equipment, completely separate issue. That component was just for the GIS. And then the third element are dispatchers, and we're looking at that. I found out that the county has been paying the bill for every one of the different taxing entities in the county for dispatch. It's in violation of Idaho Code 314804, which is very explicit, paragraph 5, that each entity, each taxing district is responsible for paying for their own share. So what I've done is started the conversation. We're going to continue to have meetings and hopefully come to a solution with all the parties involved. We formed this kind of loose collaborative of everybody who's benefiting from 911. And I'm sure we're going to come to some kind of a solution that one will obey the law, because we swear an oath to obey the law, and two will work out to the benefit of everyone. The key is to not allow any lapse in service, obviously, because the most important issue is to take care of the constituents who need 911.
Okay. Same question to you, Steve. If elected, will you work to keep us safe by updating 911 service?
Yes, I will. The former director is among the national experts and tried to work with the commission to continue the work that had started, was well underway, that should have continued over this last year with that grant, but didn't. We've lost time on that. 911 is a very serious, very important thing. Our commission sprung it on other districts that they were going to be charging them. There had been agreements reached long before that the county would pay, and they were rather surprised at a meeting to hear that that agreement was being changed unilaterally.
Can I respond?
Okay, so as you do have
a okay. As far as not doing the work, actually, they've been working diligently. Our GIS department, I think, is tops now within the state, and you find other counties are piggybacking off of what we've done. Especially with the replacement of our former director. So we've actually been working the whole time. I hate to see you run down county employees, because that's what you're doing, but they've been working very hard. It's just a daunting task to get five counties mapped efficiently enough for this next gen 911, because it's specific not only to the street, but to the house, to the floor of the apartment, to the very room you're in. So there's a lot of extra work that goes into it. Secondly, we didn't spring this on anybody. We've got an entire year to get it done. I brought it before the BCAB committee, which is an advisory committee on communications, which also includes 911. And the rumor got out that we were changing it that day, which wasn't true. It was a false accusation. It was the start of a conversation. I went to BCAB first, because procedurally you go there and then we start having the meetings. But since everyone showed up, I thought, what a great time to go ahead and have this conversation. And I said, here's where we need to go. We all need to be involved in how we get there. The change could be incremental. It could be all at once. There's a couple of different options. I don't want to be the one to make the call on my own. I want everybody's opinion on this so we can come up with a good solution that works for everyone.
A minute for you, Steve.
A collaborative, cooperative approach with the other districts is what works best.
And that's what we're doing.
Okay. Actually, we got time to squeeze in one more question. And I think this goes to you first, Steve. Do you support or oppose the proposed Rock Creek mine in Montana, which is just upriver Lake Ponderay, and has raised concern about its potential to pollute the lake with mining effluent and heavy metals?
I oppose the Rock Creek mine. I think the risk is too great for our lake, which is one of our very most important sources of revenue for the county and people who live here, most important sources of recreation value. Few things would be more important to us than the Rock Creek mine. I do not have confidence currently in the regulations, sometimes called protections, that the states and the EPA provide. The Rock Creek mine is a potential disaster for us.
Same question to you.
Okay. Yeah, I support it. In fact, if you look around this room, without mining, none of the equipment we're using, our cars, our cell phones, our computers, none of that would be possible. When I looked at the last readings, because we do get updates, we've asked for updates, we like to keep track of it. The last updates we saw were the same as the ones we saw last year, where the water coming out of that mine is cleaner than the water in the Clark Fork River. So I don't see the issue. I trust that the EPA will continue to do their job, and if there's a failure, that they will be whacked. But all of these minerals that could potentially come out of here if there was a failure are all minerals that currently exist. Every time there's rain or snow melt runoff or melt off, they go right into the river. You do the water testing on the Clark Rock River, especially in the spring, you'll see it's high in heavy metals and contaminants, and it's because they're naturally occurring. Now,
there are also a lot of mining activities way upstream.
Sure, but regardless, you can go anywhere. You can go ahead and take a sample of the lake bottom and look at the heavy metals in there. It's been going on for centuries, but they're doing a great job. They're doing a good job at keeping it clean. The EPA has been all over them, and we get regular reports.
Okay. Well, with that, we have to go to closing statements. And let's see. Dan, I think you're up first on closing statements. Okay. So you got a minute to give your pitch for why voters should vote for you.
Well, I think my track record's clear. I brought a lot of innovative solutions. There was a lot of firsts when you look at what I've done so far. First time we brought in central procurement, saved $600,000 in the first 6 months. We've never bought anything collectively. Cut the budget for the first time. Created a motor pool so we could get rid of some of the vehicles. The county was heavy on vehicles. I run this like I run a business, only without the profit motive, and it's what's needed in government, because without it, government will continue to grow and get more expensive. I made specific promises, and I completed all those promises in the first 8 months, and I'll continue to do so. People that know me know that I work really hard at this job. It's a 24/7 job for me, and I'll continue to serve the folks.
Okay. Thank you, Dan McDonald. Now, Steve Lockwood, your closing statement.
There are many opportunities in life. It's important to be where you can be the most effective at the time. Sometimes I've remained for a decade or more in a position. Other times I've moved along when goals have been achieved and another opening appears more productive. I'm endorsed by at least 7 previous county commissioners, including Kerry Kelly, Republican, and Todd Crossett, Democrat. My support comes from across the political and social spectrums. County government is not partisan. It's about delivering needed services and keeping taxes low. I will do that. You can vote for all county commission candidates wherever you live in Bonner County. I ask for your vote.
Thank you, Steve Lockwood and Dan McDonald. Thanks for a good discussion on the issues.
Sure.
Well, there you have it. This is 88.5 KRFY. The morning show, and you just heard a recorded interview with candidates for Bonner County Commissioner District 3 position, Steve Lockwood and Dan McDonald. And as always, we encourage our listeners to check statements or information given by candidates for accuracy. You can tune in next week for the final Local Decision 2018 interviews. Candidates for Bonner County Commissioner District 1 have been invited to the station to talk about the issues. Also, Proposition 2 ballot question will be reviewed. Tonight, please join me for a live in-studio interview with Holly McGarry. It will be fun, I guarantee it. That's at 7 p.m. this evening with Holly McGarry. And we hope that you have a beautiful day. We're going to hear a little bit of the Mamas and Papas and then have a whole day of autos in front of you. Thanks for listening.
Shining bright above you, night breezes sing.